Brunswick Junction on Radio Free Brooklyn. This is a brand new show hosted by me, Asha Saluja, and this is my fourth episode. Bushwick Junction is a show about life's inflection points. It's about the crossroads in our lives, which paths we choose when we reach them, and where those choices lead us or don't. We'll talk about the decisions we agonized over and the decisions we didn't even realize we were making until years after we made them. We'll talk about how we decide things, how we weigh our options, how we make our pro-con lists, or how we throw that out the window and tap into our intuition. And we'll talk about the degree to which our choices matter. Do we have any control over the things that alter our fate? Or do we end up in the same place no matter which roads we take? On each show, I'll have a guest tell me all the big decisions they've ever made in their life in order. We'll start with birth, we'll fast forward to their first big decision, we'll map out the road of their lives as a series of inflection points or junctions. So with that, I'm going to introduce to you my fourth very special guest. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Tiffany Diane. I am a native Texan and I live here in Brooklyn.
So that was Tiffany's brief introduction. I'm going to give you her slightly more non-brief introduction. maybe she was a little hesitant to brag about herself over the radio. This is, I guess it's your first time probably broadcasting live out to the world all at once.
100%.
So Tiffany is an editor and a journalist based, like you said, in Brooklyn, and also an activist. Is that a fair description?
Yeah, I like that.
And another thing that, so the first thing I like to ask on this show is, tell me about the circumstance into which you were born. And as a corollary to that, I think people have had trouble with this question, but I'm waiting for the time that it really sparks a good conversation. So I'm going to try it out on you, is what might have been a normal life circumstance for someone who was born like you, someone who was born into the circumstance that you were born, like a normal life outcome. What did your parents think your life would look like?
Okay, well, I was born to immigrants, to Chinese immigrants from Taiwan. I was born in Midland, Texas, the home place of George W. Bush.
Oh, interesting.
And I was also born to a hospital where there were no other Asians, like at the time anyway. Uh-huh. And a funny story, or it's actually not funny, more like horrific, but a story that my parents like to tell me is that when I was born, the nurse tried to mark for my ethnicity yellow.
That is mortifying.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess someone who's born into my circumstance, and, you know, I was born and raised in Texas. New York is the first place I lived outside of Texas.
Did you go to school in Texas?
Yeah, I went to school at UT Austin. But I feel like, you know, my parents definitely expected me to go into, you know, more of like a math or science field. They wanted me to be an engineer. And I could have easily, you know, turned out that way, but I decided to take a different route.
Yeah. I think now hearing you say that, that my interest in that question comes from having one parent who's an immigrant, also an Asian American immigrant. And like, I think that's an Asian parent thing, like having an idea of what your kid will be like.
Yeah.
Whereas other ethnicities of parents leave it a little bit more to fate,
yeah,
not to generalize. But
yeah, yeah. I mean, it's obviously sort of a stereotype, but it's one that I've unfortunately seen to be true for basically all of my Asian friends who are, you know, first generation born to immigrants. So I don't, you know, see that as necessarily too damaging. And, you know, as far as obviously people with non-immigrant parents, you know, there's a range of things, but I definitely don't see as much of the pressure, whereas, you know, a friend of mine who's like Filipino, who I went to college with, her parents forced her into engineering and she had no other choice. Otherwise, they wouldn't have helped her out with her college education.
Yeah, that's fascinating. That's one stranglehold that our parents can have on us. If they have the ability to help us with our education, it's like this
it's like this negotiating chip that is hard to argue with, and I think could temper our decisions along the road.
Yeah.
So what's the first big decision you ever remember making? And we've talked a little bit about your first big life decisions, but this could also be a fun opportunity for a childhood anecdote. Like, what's the first thing you ever remember doing of your own accord?
I guess I feel like when I first started to be able to buy my own clothes and dress myself, I feel like that was probably the first time I really took a lot of agency for myself. And, you know, I pretty quickly became known as someone who was like supposedly fashionable or stylish, because I used to. And I remember in fourth grade, I think I loved to just color coordinate things. So I would just wear like all orange one day or all
That's
green
so
one
fun.
Day. And so I remember in like sixth grade when they did this, our class did this weird impromptu, just like self nominated, self voted, like best in class type thing. I ended up being the most like fashionable, and I remember being very proud of that. And you know, fashion, style, and just like anything that's kind of like artistic or, you know, aesthetically pleasing has always been something that, you know, it's caught my interest.
Yeah, I think that's a fun first, kind of like a first foray into creativity that we get as children, and that women are probably encouraged into sooner than men traditionally. Like, that's a way that we're allowed to access our emotions really early on, right? Like, as a kid, you're allowed to, it's like this most basic form of self-expression.
Yeah.
Is fashion still a part of your life now?
It is, but not in as big of a way as I thought it would have been when I was young. I feel like I thought that I was going to go into a field that was sort of fashion and art related. And, you know, when I was younger and trying to figure out what I wanted to do, I factored that in a lot. But I think that coming to New York and kind of seeing what the actual, you know, like field and the scene and how it felt, I sort of felt myself distancing myself from it. And while I do love like great style, I don't think I necessarily really associate with like the fashion industry as much.
Yeah, it's kind of intense.
Yeah. Yeah.
So more of a self-mollifying, self-pleasing part of your life than one you want to associate with outwardly.
Yeah, yeah, I think so.
So with that, we can get to your first major junction, which, like, I think many people of our generation is, like, where you decide to go to college.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of, unless, like I mentioned, your parents have that bargaining chip where they can like kind of push your fate a little bit. I think that's the first place where we often individuate. It's the first like big act of self-definition we ever do.
Yeah.
So talk about that decision for you.
Well, I knew, actually, I feel like I knew earlier on than most of my classmates that I wanted to go into journalism. And that the only reason why that even came to be, though, was because growing up, I was really into literature. I loved reading and writing. I thought that I was going to like write a novel. I feel like I thought I was going to write a novel by now, which I have not. But
we can get to that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was really interested in creative writing. But I knew that my parents were never going to let me go into a liberal arts major. So I kind of like just negotiated within myself. And I thought, well, journalism is a great route for that, you know, where I can still write and, you know, be semi-creative, but I can sort of lay out this groundwork where it can be arguably a more logical career choice.
Pre-professional, ultimately.
Yeah.
You're with a lot of college majors, they beg the question, what are you going to do with that?
Yeah.
And journalism, it says it in the name. This is what I'm going to do with that.
Exactly. So, you know, after deciding what I wanted to do for school or in school, I ended up sort of basing my decision on what college I would go to based on that. I applied to colleges with good communications schools, and, you know, that included Missouri, but that I did not want to go to. I didn't want to move to Missouri, so I didn't do that. And then, of course, you know, there was Boston University, Ithaca, University of Texas, which does have a really good communication school. And I ended up kind of taking the more practical route, and I went to UT Austin and you know, I lived in Austin for 6 years and I really liked it. So
was that the more practical route because you lived there?
Yeah, yeah. In-state tuition. And also because the other colleges I wanted to go to were all up north because I obviously have an affinity for, you know, being in this tri-state area. And I was really just kind of wanting to like be independent and like move out super far away from my parents.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, when I really did the obvious like cost comparison and then even just like the comparison with rankings, things were boiling down to basically like Boston University or UT Austin. UT Austin was only, I think, like two notches down from Boston University as far as college rankings went.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you know, probably like a fifth of the price. So I just took the practical route and I went to UT Austin. I knew that's also what my parents definitely wanted me to do.
Yeah, I super relate to this thing that you're talking about of like looking at the rankings mm-hmm. and knowing that that's leverage for mm-hmm. your parent, like being like, oh, well, I think that they'll be into this because see, it's on paper. Like mm-hmm. it's this analytical argument that it's like the most objective information you can find about this big choice in your life.
Yeah.
How did that turn out?
I definitely don't regret it. I really loved Austin as a place to, you know, kind of like come to age. It was, you know, a safe enough and small enough community, but then it definitely had a lot of the like big city thrills. You know, there was always something to do. I went out like all the time. And I really like imbued myself into the like Austin nightlife and like fashion scenes and personally really enjoyed it. I don't regret living in Austin at all. So
seems like everyone loves it there.
Yeah, yeah. It's really easy to love. But then at the same time, you know, they call it like a velvet rut for a reason because it's so comfortable.
Ooh, I've never heard that. Velvet rut. So you're really stuck.
Yeah.
But, okay.
But it's so comfortable that
so
you don't
nice.
Realize it.
Did you have fun? Was college really fun for you?
Definitely. I mean, I went to school for only 3 years. I really wanted to be out in the real world. So mm-hmm. I did, you know, like winter semesters and summer semesters just to like get out faster and also, you know, save some money, which is good. But at the same time, you know, while I was in school, I wasn't super, super involved like in the school part. Obviously, I went to classes. I made good grades. But I really more so enjoyed like venturing outside of that and into like the Austin scene and, you know, hanging out with who I thought were like the movers and shakers of Austin and trying to really like grow up really fast and be more of like an adult and not just a college student.
I super relate to that. Oh my gosh. I think they're almost, it's like this binary of people. There are some people in this world who want to grow up faster and there are mm-hmm. some people in this world who can't seem to grow up fast enough and I am totally in that first camp. I've yeah. always wanted to be in the next stage of life while yeah. I'm in the current one.
Yeah, I think that's still me today, honestly.
I feel like I'm at a point where I'm just starting to like slow myself down in that regard.
Mm.
Are you still, you mentioned trying to connect with the movers and shakers. Do you mm-hmm. feel like that panned out in any way that impacted your later life? Like, did you connect with any movers or shakers who played a role later?
I mean, yeah, I think so. So this is always, I don't know why, but I find it a little bit embarrassing, but I was an Austin blogger.
When I was
in school, I was, you know, like I said, I was trying to just like expand my horizons on my own and, you know, I wanted to write, obviously. So I started this blog called Austin is Burning.
That's awesome.
Yeah, like Paris is Burning.
Yeah.
And it started out originally where I was just trying to make it this personal blog. Like I was just wanting to like write about my experiences, you know, and of course, a lot of that did have to do with like me going out and me dressing up and all of that. So it ended up sort of like evolving into this nightlife blog in a way because I was writing about all the parties that I would go to or that I could go to. And so I started like listing out just every event that was happening. And so that was what ended up kind of like drawing people to the blog was, you know, I would basically just like list an itinerary of events that were going on that weekend.
Cool.
So that was great because it did open up doors. From there, you know, I ended up getting like featured in the local paper and like local websites and stuff. I remember this magazine that is like now not a thing anymore called Rare, like ranked me as like the Austin's best blogger, and Nylon ended up like reaching out to me because of that. They were looking for local bloggers in several cities to do these newsletters. And they selected me as their Austin like daily newsletter blogger. So that was really great. And from there also, you know, I met a lot of really cool people that I feel like still I'm friends with today and have helped me out a lot. I met this woman, Esty Choi, who ended up hiring me for her online boutique, bydefinition.com, which is also no longer a thing just because, you know, the passage of time.
Yeah.
But yeah, and she's still, and she lives in New York too. So she's helped me out a lot, where when I first moved here, she helped me get like copywriting jobs. And, you know, I still list her as like a reference on my resume. So I don't
cool.
know.
So the answer is yes. Like, you totally, that's a really cool college story. Like, that's, like that's an immense amount of success for a college student, and it also sounds really fun.
I thought so. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So this sort of sets you on the path that you are returning to, or still are mm-hmm. still on mm-hmm. today. So what happened? What happened to your blog? Like, when? How did you wrap that project up, if at all?
Yeah, it's definitely wrapped up. I finally stopped paying for that domain name because I kind of held onto it for a while thinking that someone was going to pay me a lot of money for it. But maybe I just don't really understand the internet as well as I thought I did. Hmm. But yeah, when I moved to New York, I thought I was going to like pivot it into this like different kind of blog. That was just going to be a personal one. But, you know, I'm sure as you and everyone else who lives in the city knows, it's just so much more fast paced that, you know, I had to, of course, just find jobs and stay really busy. And I didn't really have that same time to like take to myself and do something like run a personal blog or, you know, try to promote it in any way. So I just kind of let it like fade away. And so it's no longer a thing. But, you know, I still do credit the blog for like a lot of my like later success, because I feel like it opened a lot of doors just because people saw it and they noticed it and they, you know, wanted to hire me to write for them.
Yeah. Do you remember your decision to pull the trigger and do it? Or did it start as a very personal project?
Yeah, it did just start very personally. And I definitely wasn't trying to get people to like necessarily read it or anything. And I remember, you know, just slowly throughout time, like people started to like subscribe to it because that was how Blogger worked back then. Probably still does, but I don't really blog anymore.
Kind of a dinosaur.
Yeah. I'm like, people use Squarespace now, I guess. But yeah, I just remember it started just gaining this attention and this traction. And I was like, oh, I guess I should really like go for it and just do something with this. And yeah, I felt like it just helped open a lot of doors.
Cool. Yeah, I think there's really something to be said for starting a pursuit that is also the most fun thing that you would also be doing anyway, mm-hmm. right? Like, even if, like what you just described, the type of pursuit where you would be naturally doing that on your own time in private mm-hmm. feels like it can be the most powerful start to the most exciting paths.
Yeah, I definitely believe that.
So the blog's wrapped up. You finished school in 3 years, impressively. Congrats. What is next? What happens after that?
Well, I stayed in Austin for, I think, 2 years after graduating. I was just kind of like, honestly, having a great time with it at first. I had these opportunities. When I first got out of college, I was hired as the editor-in-chief for this student publication that is also no longer a thing, called The Horn. And I, you know, was working for SD at doing By Definition, which was the e-commerce platform. So I was like an e-commerce manager. And
this is still living in Austin.
This is still in Austin. Yeah. So I had, you know, like a couple of things that were just definitely keeping me there. I was, you know, like living in my cute little studio apartment on the east side. And I just really loved, I loved the lifestyle. And like I said, it can be this velvet rut. Where
did you
so
live really close to UT? Sorry to interrupt you.
It wasn't super. It was like close enough to campus. When I was at UT, I mostly lived like, you know, in or around campus. But then once I graduated, I moved a little bit further away to Manor, which I don't know if anyone listening is familiar with Austin, but it's just like East Austin, but like only a little bit north of UT campus. And so I stayed in town for 2 years, and then the next big decision was moving to New York, and that has a weird story to it as well.
Can't wait to get into it. 2 years though.
Yeah, yeah.
How did that feel? Like, did you feel the velvet rut happening to you, or were you excited to be where you were, or were you like,
yeah,
not knowing what to do next?
So I always wanted to move to New York. That was always kind of the end goal.
How always?
I think, first of all, I wanted to go to New York for school. So I definitely wanted to, like, as early as high school that I can remember.
Had you been before? Did you just have the idea in your head?
It was mostly an idea, but I did go on, I think, one or two family trips where we went to New York, but mostly only saw Times Square. So
right.
It wasn't even necessarily like the experience of being here that drew me to it. It was just the concept of it, you know?
Yeah. Watching, the experience like, itself yeah. was probably horrible and Times Square oriented.
Yeah.
Cool. So this was an idea in the back of your mind.
Yeah, that I wanted to move here. But I stuck around in Austin semi out of practicality again because I had the jobs and I knew that I could, you know, live stably there. I was living in a studio apartment for $600. So,
oh my God. Don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
Tell me about the, like, in those 2 years, mm-hmm. did the idea of moving to New York nag at you? Or are you kind of like, did you feel this increasing momentum of needing to make it happen?
I think the first year I was there after college, I didn't feel too much of that nagging, but then the second year I definitely did. And that was 2011 because I moved to New York in 2012. But you know, I think that, you know, also I was like, when I was first out of college, I was like dating someone and you know, there's always reasons to like stay in your hometown or whatever. But, as these opportunities kind of started to run out, like I said, the e-commerce platform ended up going out of business. And, you know, we basically like wrapped all that up. I like, you know, held all these pop-up shops to like sell all the rest of the merchandise. And so that ended up kind of like running its course. And then, you know, I ended up leaving the student publication because I was getting further away from being a student. So I didn't really feel like as attached to that.
That stayed, you're welcome.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, as these opportunities were running out, I started to feel a lot more stir crazy. I was like looking for jobs in town and things just weren't really panning out like I thought that they would. And of course, there was always still that beacon of, you know, wanting to move to New York, but just kind of always thinking like I needed to wait till the time was right. And that never necessarily happened, but I felt catapulted into it.
By these two things wrapping up?
Not just by that. There was actually kind of more to the story.
Let's go for it.
So that last year I was there, there was just like a series of unfortunate events where I felt like I was having the most unlucky year ever. And I think those happen sometimes.
Yeah.
It comes in waves.
I don't know how into astrology you are, but I just got really into astrology. And I'm convinced now that those series of unfortunate events years are related to some energetic force in the universe, just pulling your life strings.
I'll admit that I definitely read a lot into astrology, or not a lot, I can't admit to that, but I read a bit into it, and it's something that I give a lot of thought to. I'm still not sure
You're
if
not
I'm
convinced.
A believer.
Yeah. I'm with you. There's no way, you have to be agnostic about it. No one can prove it, but.
But it's still very interesting, and I will say that sometimes things are just so spot on that it makes me want to believe in it.
So let's talk about your series of unfortunate events.
Okay, so 2011 was the shittiest year ever. I remember that I was broken up with by my boyfriend.
What month?
That was in September 2011.
Okay.
And then I feel like maybe it was a month or two after that. And this was also, he broke up with me like a month before my birthday, which, you know, that sucked, but yeah, whatever. And then I remember a little bit after my birthday, I got robbed.
Oh my God.
In this really messed up way too, where, I had a, you know, a purse on my shoulder and a friend of mine was talking to these random, I think they were teens, honestly, in a PT Cruiser. I always remember it was an orange PT Cruiser. They were probably driving their like mom's car.
The
or something.
Least badass car. Yeah.
And when my friend had distracted me enough, and he wasn't in on it, I think he was a pawn basically, they grabbed my bag on my shoulder and drove away as fast as possible and dragged me into the middle of the road.
Oh my gosh.
So I was obviously like, that was a terrible experience.
That's,
I was so shocked.
Traumatic. Yeah.
I was traumatized by that.
Were you injured physically?
I had road rash, you know.
Oh my God.
I didn't have to go to the hospital or anything, and I was sore afterward, but I don't think that anything actually damaging really happened, which is good.
Okay.
And luckily there were no cars coming, so I wasn't, you know, hit by a car, which would have been the worst probably possible outcome. But yeah, so I got robbed, and then I think that I was also in an accident after that. I was hit on my scooter. I had a scooter at the time, a little like Honda Passport, and that was my mode of transportation. And so I remember being like downtown and just heading home, and a drunk driver in a Ford F-250 hit me on my scooter.
Wow. And was it at night?
That was at night. Yeah. I feel like it was just like midnight or something. And I'd only been out for like a little bit and I was just headed home. And he apparently had like a blood alcohol level of twice the legal limit and admitted to having like 16 pints of Guinness or something ridiculous.
I think that's a song. Wait, so was that a legal battle also?
Like, that was also a legal battle. And I will say that this was also a weird, I don't know if it was a sign or anything, but I did end up getting a settlement out of that, and that settlement did help me move to New York. So
that's a major junction.
Yeah.
Those are two really bad junctions.
Yeah.
Well, I can't speak to the relationship, but it sounds like that ended up being an okay junction.
Yeah, it was okay.
Discarding men from your life is never that bad of a junction.
I agree.
Getting robbed, it sounds like there was no bright side to that one. But
no, yeah.
Yeah, so these three kind of catastrophic events in a row ended up being really traumatizing, but mm-hmm. also really transformative.
Yeah, yeah. And I just felt like I was being ejected out of the city, honestly. I was like, I'm running out of opportunities. These terrible things keep on happening to me.
In
I think
threes.
It's time to go.
Yeah. In threes. That's a crazy story. It does feel like the city was ejecting you. If it wasn't the moon and the stars, it was, that does sound like the universe conspiring to get you here or at least get you out.
Yeah, definitely.
Has anything bad like that happened to you since? I mean, I know bad things have happened to you and mm-hmm. us as a society, especially this year, but has anything like really fucking, you can curse on this podcast in case you're wondering.
Thank you.
Really like terrible and cruel only to you? Has anything like that happened since?
I feel like I can't say anything like 2011 has been as bad up until 2016. And that was more of like a, you know, countrywide, you know, a grievance, not so much of a personal thing.
Yeah.
Of course, I think that everyone has taken it very personally, understandably, because it is, you know, the personal is political.
Don't trust anyone who doesn't.
Yeah. And so I would say no, that was definitely to me my unluckiest year. Afterward, my mom got me this lucky bracelet that I'm wearing now still.
Aww.
I put it on at midnight of 2012. It's like apparently a Chinese like good luck thing.
That's beautiful.
And I haven't taken off since. And I'm a little bit now superstitious that if I take it off that more bad things are going to happen.
Wow.
But since that, no, I haven't had anything like that awful happen, you know, knock on wood, of course.
Do you mind if I take this detour? And if you don't want to talk about this, that's fine. Mm-hmm. I've been wanting to get into committing to tattoos, and mm-hmm. I noticed one on mm-hmm. your, not in me personally, on this show. Mm-hmm. I've been wanting to talk about decisions to get tattoos. Because I feel like that's such a junction.
Yeah,
it's like it's inking something permanently on your body. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many you have. For the listener, I just noticed when Tiffany showed me her wrist, one was under it. Ooh, seems like I asked about a good one.
Yeah,
this one. Do you mind telling us the story?
Yeah, I have six tattoos. And they're all like not too big or anything. I don't have anything colored or like a full sleeve or anything like that. They're all kind of like small trinkets.
Mm-hmm.
The one that's on my wrist that you saw is actually a Friday the 13th tattoo.
Oh, like a flash. Cool.
Yeah, yeah. And so this one I got before I moved to New York. It was just kind of like a fun thing that I did with my friend. But my first one I got when I turned 18. On my foot, it's a peace sign. It's my secret tattoo. No one really ever sees it, but you know, I wanted to get a tattoo on my 18th birthday, so I did.
I have a secret tattoo too. It's my area code on my ankle.
Really? Oh, wait, yeah. So you do have a tattoo then?
No, I do. I have a couple. I want to talk.
Yeah,
I'm not sure if that holds a lot of interest for people, but it's kind of crazy to me that you can walk into a room and then come out like a literally different person physically for the rest of your life.
That's true.
Whether it's plastic surgery or tattoos or...
Yeah. And some of them have been spontaneous decisions, like the Friday the 13th ones. I have two, actually. I got one this year. It's on my arm. I don't know if you can see it, but it's a little plant.
Oh, I love that one.
Yeah, I really liked that. But then the rest of them, I've typically like given more thought. I think the one that's on my back is probably the one that I thought about for the longest. I think I thought about it for 4 whole years before I got it.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a the outline of a paper crane.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah, so it had like some symbolism for me, and I wanted to be very sure that I wanted to commit to it because it was the second one that I got after my peace sign tattoo, which I wasn't quite as sure of. So
right. Yeah. Do you have different relationships to those? I know we just sort of confessed our secret tattoos, but do you feel any sense of shame about the secret one, or do you feel like it's part of your journey?
Yeah, I think it's just part of my journey, and I can't hate on peace. So
yeah, that's not a bad one, to be honest. Nothing to be ashamed of there.
Yeah, it could have been worse.
So we can get back on track now. resuming with your move to New York.
Yeah, so I've been in New York now for 5.5 years. I moved here, like I said, in 2012, and I've been in Brooklyn only since, because I love Brooklyn. Why live in Manhattan?
With you. And, I've done it before, but NYU kind of necessitates. What was it like when you got here? Was it what you expected?
I mean, of course it wasn't exactly what I expected, because I feel like most of my opinion of New York was sort of based on Sex and the City.
Interesting. And
just because it was like the only show that I'd binge watched that was based in New York. And, you know, I was also like a journalist, a writer who owns a lot of shoes. And so I really related with Carrie's character.
Carrie. Cute.
I mean, no one really wants to be a Carrie, but I'm kind of...
No, there's nothing wrong with being a Carrie. Like, who else would you want to be?
Samantha.
Ew. Yeah.
She's the most, like, confident.
Who's the lawyer? What's the lawyer's
Miranda.
Name? Yeah. I feel like people want to be Miranda's the least.
I think I'm actually a Miranda Carrie. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know which one I am. maybe we can revisit that.
Oh, yeah. I'll have to get to know you a little
better.
Should
I just like ask every guest, male or female or any gender in between, which of the four that they are once they show up in the studio? Let's probably table that idea.
Yeah.
Okay. So you show up to live your best Carrie life, and it turns out that you can't afford an apartment as big as Carrie's?
I went from living, like I said, alone in Austin in a studio to living in a 3-bedroom apartment with roommates, of course.
How did you find your first roommates?
Well, I was lucky because the first roommates I had were my sisters.
Oh, amazing. Yeah. Wait, we haven't talked about your siblings.
Yeah, I'm a middle child. I have 2 sisters.
One older, one younger.
Yeah.
Three sisters.
Just three
and
girls.
They both were already here.
No. So we all came here around the same time.
Wow. Wait, this introduces so many new junctions.
Yeah.
I don't want to get too into this, but can you touch briefly on why they wanted to move here at the same time?
100%. Yeah. So my younger sister moved here because she was in her last semester of school, and part of her, she actually went to school for fashion merchandising. So that was something that I was a little resentful and bitter about, I'll admit, because like I said, I thought that things like that were out of the picture, you know,
anything
to do with like the arts or, you know, of course, fashion being a part of the arts.
That's interesting because when I hear fashion merchandising, I feel like that's a mitigating choice between loving fashion and needing to do something practical.
Right. Yeah. It is a business, you know, degree.
Yeah.
And so I think that she also might have like done some, you know, negotiations with herself and the career that she wanted. With my parents, but I will also say that they gradually became more and more lenient with us, especially because, you know, obviously my older sister and I paved the way for this sort of like not going within the typical or just, you know, the preconceived realm that they wanted us to go into, which was engineering or medicine.
And what about your older sister?
She ended up being an East Asian studies major.
Parents can't argue with that.
Yeah. They didn't like it because it was liberal arts, but I think that they loved that she was interested in, you know, our culture.
Right.
So my older sister was at the time in law school. So she's actually now a lawyer living in Kentucky and a corporate lawyer, too. And so she had a internship as well in the city at Anheuser-Busch. And my younger sister, like I said, had an internship that she was, seeing out for the last semester of her college in fashion.
Did you guys plan this together? Were you like, we all need to get internships in New York, or did the stars just align?
Well, I think for the two of them, the stars kind of just aligned. I think that maybe my older sister made it easier for her to make the decision because she knew that we were also wanting to go there. But I'm not totally sure. I don't really entirely know what her decision-making skills were. Maybe it was just the best opportunity that she got.
Mm-hmm.
And then my younger sister, you know, that she was the same way as me. We were very similar that in that, you know, we both wanted to, like, you know, live out these creative careers in New York City. And I will admit that another part of my moving to New York the way that I did, you know, hastily without any job opportunities, was that my sister was definitely going to be coming here because of her internship. And I sort of, in this like sibling rivalry way, couldn't let her beat me here.
Yeah.
So I moved here 1 month before they did.
And they couldn't live your dreams before you.
And, yeah. And I found the apartment and we lived together. But my older sister was only there for a semester, so we ended up replacing her eventually. And then my younger sister, after 1 year living with me in that apartment, moved to the city because she's definitely way more of like a Manhattan girl.
More of a true Carrie.
I think that she's probably a Miranda Charlotte hybrid.
Okay, but your older sister must be kind of Miranda-y too.
Yeah, she's also a Miranda Charlotte. I feel like them two are both Miranda Charlottes.
Cool. Okay, so that's really beautiful how that all panned out. And I'm an only child, so I'm like a little bit filled with envy, but I'm also not filled with envy about the need, like the pressure to compete with these people who are sort of proxies for you for life achievements.
Yeah,
sounds definitely stressful.
It is stressful, and I'm a middle child, so you know.
Extra. Okay, so you got here, you're living with them. Mm-hmm. Let's maybe skip. I'm sure living with your sisters was a great like stepping stone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it was comfortable, of course. So it was nice to like be around family, and it wasn't like I was just kind of like splashed into the deep end.
Right. I think that living here can be so alienating for some people. It's really hard to make friends. Mm-hmm. I had the mitigating factor of like, or like the, I had the like waiting pool of college here, so that made things a little easier. But I can't imagine just moving here as an adult.
Yeah.
And knowing no one.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'll say that I was also lucky in that a lot of people from Austin moved to Brooklyn. It's like this, you know, open interchange, basically. People just go back and forth.
That makes sense.
Yeah, and LA too, of course. But yeah, so I was just hustling really hard when I first came here because I didn't come here with a job opportunity. I was let's see, I think my first job that I got was as an e-commerce manager for a skate shop called KCDC. It's the oldest skate shop in Brooklyn.
Cool.
They're still around. And then I was, you know, so I took on some like random retail jobs too. I was freelance writing. And I ended up also bartending, which was something so out of the realm of what I was, you know, used to. But I think that everyone should work in service industry because it teaches you a lot about humanity.
I'm sure. Do you think, what do you carry with you from that to this day?
Well, now I think that it just, I think it makes me a lot more gracious toward other people because I understand what that's like to have people come in and treat you as like sort of subhuman in a way.
Oof.
Yeah, because I was a cocktail waitress and then I became a bartender and, you know, I worked on Saturday nights until 4 a.m., and so I just felt like I learned so much about like the way that people can treat people in the service industry. And now I'm just so much more aware of that. And, you know, whenever and, you know, in New York, I think it's you're used to like the harshness of people in the service industry. And that's totally fine. But I just am so much more understanding of it. And I don't feel any need to like, you know, lash back or whatever.
So How do we fast forward to now? What do you, are there any major life junctions or anything in between now and then that if X hadn't happened, you wouldn't Y?
Yeah. I mean, definitely. I think, so I ended up, like I said, I had multiple, I used to have like 3 to 4 jobs at any given moment. But that was all up until 2014, I got my first full-time like big girl job. That kind of took me a little while longer than I feel like it did for most people.
How did that make you feel? Was it frustrating or were you happy as a freelancer? Some people love that life.
Yeah, I think I was comfortable in what I was doing. And I think that I'm also the kind of person where I'm so loyal to like the people that I work for some weird reason. And I also get very comfortable in the like positions that I'm in that I don't necessarily, while I do, I compare myself to people a lot, like all the time. I wasn't necessarily seeing an opportunity that I thought that I could ease my way into. So I was fine. But at the same time, of course, you know, comparing myself to my sisters who both had, you know, these like very, these much more set, you know, careers or these set, you know, paths for themselves. And, you know, even just obviously hearing, you know, my mom would be like, I'm concerned about you. You are bartending and, you know, I thought that you would have a salary and stuff. So there was a lot of like external pressure. And so I finally ended up taking a full-time job when it was offered to me, but it was outside of the field that I thought I was going to be working in.
I'm so interested in that and I want to talk about it, but I have one question about the bartending thing.
Yeah.
It's not really a junction question. I just think it's an insight into your personality. Did part of you love living a life that wasn't expected of you? Was part of you like, yeah, you're right, Mom. I am bartending and I don't have a salary and I'm making it work.
Yeah.
Did that weigh on you?
No, I think I loved it. I really did like it. I didn't have to learn how to bartend. I could have just been like, this is going to be a, you know, cocktail waitressing job that I have for a little while and then I'm going to like collect my money and leave.
Mm-hmm.
But I ended up, you know, getting really into it. I, you know, trained to be a bartender and that's obviously different at a cocktail bar than just like a dive bar. And I ended up even competing in this thing called Speed Rack, which is an all-female speed bartending competition.
How fun!
Which I was in the top 8 for, but I got out in my first round because I had already at the time actually been working my full-time job. So I was only bartending one night or two nights a week. Actually, I was working 7 days a week at that time.
Wow.
So I didn't quite have the same chops as the other women did because they were working at fast pace, like Manhattan bars, like every single night, you know, which is fine, though. I felt just really proud to be there. But yeah, I got really into bartending for the moment that I was in it because I just feel like I love giving like 100% of myself into anything that I do. And for a while, I also really loved how it was such a departure from what's expected, you know, of like an Asian American female. And
yeah,
I liked that. You know, I felt like I'm a minority in most places and fields that I'm in, but I was definitely a minority within like bartenders because you see mostly like white males,
right,
as bartenders. Yeah.
I love, okay, two things. One, I think it's really beautiful to know that and say that and own that about yourself, that you give 100% to everything you do. Like, mm-hmm. that is beautiful and awesome and so empowering to hear someone say. Secondly, I feel like that doubles back on my original question that I really am wanting to lean into mm-hmm. with this project is like, when are you doing what's not expected of you? Mm. And I feel like those moments when you're doing what's not expected of you are like what makes you you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's something I'm also trying to lean into more because I think that there's always a struggle within myself to kind of like go the path of convention. Mm-hmm. Just because, first of all, there's always going to be outside pressures, you know, to just kind of conform. And, you know, some of those do come from like your family if they're more traditional, or, you know, just seeing your friends taking more conventional paths and doing things like buying houses and you know, comparing yourselves to them and thinking that these are sort of, you know, things that you're supposed to be achieving at the same time. But then also sort of giving into, you know, like the things that make you a little bit like weird or like make you not normal. And yeah, I think that's always a battle within myself that I'm trying to like figure out which side is going to win.
Yeah, yeah. I relate to that. It's where the life's at.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the junction that you've recently reached.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I just for the sake of time, you mentioned taking a full-time job mm-hmm. that was outside the field you wanted to be in. Mm-hmm. That's the job that you're...
Well, it's actually not. The job that I took before was a tech startup. They had this app called Photo with three H's.
Oh.
It was basically, actually, it was exactly what Boomerang knocked off. So Photo, unfortunately, is no longer a thing, but they are still a, you know, a tech startup. But they work more in the events field.
Like a booth, kind
yeah,
of.
Yeah, yeah, they had yeah. the photo booth. And that's what I was doing was I was a producer, you know, I was helping produce their events. At the same time, obviously, like, really into the app, though, because it was this very artistic thing. And so, you know, that was a way for me to feel out my creativity in this job that it wasn't super creative, I guess. And the next big choice that I made basically was quitting that job. And I did quit it just like without any opportunities on the horizon. I had been there for, I would probably say that I was there for like 6 months and wanting to leave. But I just sort of, again, you know, liked the stability. I felt like, you know, I couldn't leave if I didn't have another job lined up. But I'm not totally sure what gave me the, you know, that final push to just like quit. But I decided to quit and try to freelance right full time. But I ended
up... Was it hard?
The decision was really hard. I kept on delaying it. And I will say that there was... a family tragedy that sort of, first of all, delayed it more, but then also sort of gave me that extra push to like, you know, just go for it. Because I, you know, obviously anytime there's a death in the family, you think about the shortness of life. And so I ended up quitting that job in June of this year. And I got a job a week later, basically.
The universe.
So I am still working a full-time job. And it is in my field, you know, in journalism. And it was just weird. I still do look on that, like, the freelance lifestyle, though, with sort of envy, because I think the grass is always greener on the other side. And I've never done that. I did, obviously, before with, like, the multiple jobs. But I didn't pursue just journalism full-time freelance. And that's something that I've always thought was, I don't know, glamorous or romantic somehow.
Yeah. And well, I think another crazy, like, before we get more into that, just the grace of quitting something and having something fall to catch you into mm-hmm. place a week later is mm-hmm. like really beautiful and speaks to probably you like hustled to create that opportunity mm-hmm. for yourself. It wasn't like out of thin air,
mm-hmm.
but that's cool. And I think is a clear sign from just the world mm-hmm. that you made the right choice.
Yeah, it felt like that for sure.
Do you feel like that would happen again if you did the same thing to get back into that life or no?
I don't know. I don't like to test fate, but I feel like it's going to be a similar thing, though, where it's going to be one of those things where it's a push and pull. And finally, I just have to like take a leap and see what happens. Maybe it won't be the same. But at this point, I think that I've gained enough confidence to just know that I can make it no matter what, because I'm willing to do things like bartend and take part-time jobs and random odd gigs and jobs just in order to like survive. And I think that's a part of obviously like immigrant mentality.
The hustle. Yeah. The immigrant hustle.
Yeah. I'm not one of those people where I'm like, I'm only going to hold out for like the best salary at the best place, you know, with the best position. I definitely a lot more of just like, I'm okay with the struggle as long as I know that I'm taking steps toward whatever it is that I want my end goal to be.
Yeah, totally. I think there's security in not needing security. Mm-hmm. There's almost this like extreme boldness that comes from knowing you don't need anything.
Mm-hmm.
And it also sounds like when you take a step in the right direction, or rather when you're pointed in the right direction, any next step is a good step. So whatever you do toward this goal that you're working toward now, working in journalism full time, which mm-hmm. you already are and want to make even a bigger part of your life possibly.
Yeah.
Anything you do that points in that direction will be the right thing.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And, you know, a lot of people who I've met in New York, you know, people who moved here more recently, they're always asking, you know, for advice. And I feel like my biggest advice is always that basically is just, you know, if you know what you want to do, you don't have to wait for that perfect opportunity to come by. You have to just kind of like do little things in order to get to that place. And so maybe it is just like, I'm going to sign up for a job, or I'm going to join this like, you know, Facebook group with job opportunities, or I'm going to like, you know, call that person up for coffee that, you know, might have some advice or connections. You know, those are all just like little things that you can do. And it doesn't have to be achieving that actual goal for it to like feel like success.
Right. For it to feel like momentum.
Mm-hmm.
And what a gift to kind of have known that this is what you wanted to do since high school.
Yeah.
I think that's the problem that people have is just not knowing. And knowing or deciding, committing is a big part of this.
Yeah. And you know, I did kind of feel, there were times when I felt a little bit more like strayed away from it. And you know, when I did take that full-time job in tech, I was considering, you know, just kind of giving up journalism completely.
What was that like? What were the pros and cons of
it? Was I think it's interesting because then you get the chance to explore, you know, different avenues and you know, finding out what's right and what's not right for you. And and I think that what I actually came away with it, though, was that it wasn't that I was necessarily in the wrong field or that journalism wasn't right for me. I think that what I learned was that the way in which I was pursuing it before wasn't right for me, because I thought that I should work for, you know, just like a straight up fashion, arts and culture magazine or website. And, you know, and this sounds maybe corny, but definitely post-election, I was like, oh, wait, no, I need to write about news. I need to write about, you know, like life and culture and things that are to me, and this, I'm not trying to trivialize fashion or art because those are very important things. But to me, I felt like these were things that were more consequential that I really needed to focus on. And so I'm kind of trying to take more of that route where I want to write about things that are being affected right now by this administration, you know?
Yeah, I think a lot of people had that experience.
Yeah.
And I think in some ways, having something horrible going on in the world makes the need for outlet and fashion and art that much more important. So you're right. It's not to trivialize the people who are still chugging along in those areas. Mm-hmm. But I think we all just sort of zoomed into what mattered over the last year or so.
Definitely.
We have 4 more minutes. Mm-hmm. I need like a minute at the end. I'd love to know what steps you've taken or what you have in mind to do next to mm-hmm. work toward that goal of focusing on what matters to you.
Well, right now I'm actually working on something that's very important to me. I told you a little bit about it before, but I'm writing a piece for Banana Magazine, which is actually my sister, my younger sister's magazine. It's all about contemporary Asian culture. So obviously something that's of interest to me. But I'm writing a piece all about Asian American pro doms, which is a professional dominatrix. And I have been a lot more interested in sort of investigating, you know, different aspects of my own identity and my own gender. And so I'm moving toward, you know, figuring out different ways to do that through my writing and through, you know, investigative reporting and research and just finding new ways to write about and express, you know, the ways in which the ways that contemporary Asian Americans are identifying these days, because, you know, we're no longer just fresh off the boat. You know, we're not living the same American dream or immigrant stories that our parents are. So I feel like there just needs to be new outlets and new ways to kind of explore the unique experience that we have.
Yeah, completely agree. Diversity of storytelling is what's going to save the world, I swear.
Yeah.
Is there anything of your own that you'd like to plug? This was a good plug and your sister's magazine sounds amazing. Yeah. Is there any other project or website that you'd like to direct listeners to?
Yeah, sure. Well, so Banana can be found at banana-mag.com. And like I said, that's my sister's magazine. It's really great. I love the pieces that they do. It's about kind of like this intersection between like Eastern and Western Asian cultures. And then I do actually have this art project that is ongoing since my days in Austin called Voyeur. This is something very out of the realm of what I've been talking about, but it's wearevoyeur.com, and it's this art project that I do where I, because I'm such a voyeur, I give disposable cameras to different people, and I have them take a roll of film in the span of 1 week, and then I interview them, I post all their pictures.
That is just so cool. I love that. Okay, it's about time for us to wrap up here. Yeah. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you so much for being here.
I really appreciate it. Thank you guys for listening. Donate to Radio Free Brooklyn. Find them on their website for ways to donate. It's a community radio station, nonprofit, funded by listeners like you. Theme song is by Nation of Language. Check them out on Bandcamp. And if you have any interest in being on the show or any questions for me, you can find me on Facebook or email me, Asha@radiofreebrooklyn.com. That's all. Bye.